Good morning. It's 8:35 this morning on July the 31st, I think. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Sure, today is the 31st of July. It's Friday. For some reason, it's not showing up for me today. Yeah, it's Friday, July 31st. I'm an hour late at 8:20. It was 8:25, not 8:35. I said it so often, you'd think I could realize that I was misspeaking the whole time. So yeah, I'm an hour late this morning because I overslept for an hour. Yeah. 35 minutes. But I didn't get out till 7:30-ish. So 8 o'clock-ish. I wasn't awake and I needed at least half a cup of coffee in me before I could come out here. And I'm sorry that I waited. It's hot. It's according to the thermometer, it says 65, but that feels more like 75. Particularly when you get in the sun. The sun is just gonna be ugly today. The forecast is calling for a high of 94. I'm guessing that's optimistic. That's probably going to be closer to 100. And I have got to mow the front yard today. So, yeah, that's probably going to happen as soon as I get home or very shortly thereafter. Because I'll probably give it till 9. Just out of deference to the neighbors. But, yeah. It's gonna be a scorcher. So yesterday was a really good writing day. I got caught up in honeydews, and they took up pretty much all morning and part of the afternoon. And so writing really consisted of starting chapter 4, and that's about it. I got Chapter 4, Port Newmar, and the date. And that's about as far as I got yesterday, so it was a little disappointing. I'm hoping for better today, but I'm not holding out a lot of hope. It's one of those things. If I didn't have to mow the lawn, if I didn't have to fix breakfast and lunch and dinner, today I could have yogurt for breakfast. I had oatmeal yesterday, I had eggs the day before. I could have yogurt today. Yogurt would be good. I got plenty of berries. Berries were on sale at the local Kroger, King Supermarket. And so I got a couple of packs of strawberries. We've got to eat them up, so that's a good excuse. At least it doesn't take very long to weigh out 200 grams of yogurt and then plus a few strawberries on the top. So in writing news, one of the big, I got a big boost yesterday. Those of you who have listened for a while know that I licensed my books to Japan and Korea and for translations. for to publishing houses in those countries. And it was, you know, so I got a decent advance from each. It was big money, but particularly once we took out the commissions from both ends, but it was still, it was nice. It was found cash. That was money I wouldn't have otherwise have acquired if I hadn't done it. And yesterday I heard from my foreign rights agent, and turns out in Japan, the quarter share version edition in Japanese has earned out, which I was completely flabbergasted by. I couldn't imagine that it would earn out, but it did. And I even got a little check besides for earned royalties. It's a bonus. I was surprised that it earned. And maybe that'll mean that they'll be interested in the rest of the books. I hope they're interested in the rest of the books, because I would like to have them make covers for the rest of the books. Because their cover is just awesome. And I'd like to license it for use on my own. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But it was quite a kick in the pants. It was really like, wow. These stories translate to different cultures, which is really interesting. The Japanese one actually earned out isn't really too surprising, because the story structure is much more Japanese four act arc in quarter share and half share. In fact, all of them are much more about the four act structure that's common in Japan. Than they have in common with the more Western three-act structure. There's actually a name for it that I can't dredge up right at the moment, and probably couldn't pronounce very well if I did, so it's just as well. So that was good news. And it's been a lot of talk in the back channels lately about genre and how people who have mashups just can't seem to get any traction. And the reason is that the reason seems so patently obvious to me that I have trouble understanding why these questions keep coming up. The reason is that the people who browse through books and see a mashup, it's not that, I think the writers think that if they have some of each of two different genres in the book, then it will appeal to both audiences. And the reality is, it only appeals to the intersection of the audiences. It only appeals to those people who will like both of them. So when people are browsing, they're not looking for a reason to buy the book. They're looking for a reason to reject the book. So I don't like zombies, so I'm not going to read a science fiction zombie story. Or I don't like werewolves, so I'm not going to read a zombie werewolf story. Which is a little narrow, but you get the idea. So it's not a question of, I mean, there are some people who will be willing to take a chance, but majority of people are looking for a reason to reject a book, not for a reason to buy it. Ooh, I like this, even though there's zombies in it, I better buy it. No, that's me. If it's got zombies in it, it's automatically, I'm not going to read this. I don't care about zombies, I don't care about vampires. I'm a little bit vampired out, I'm a little bit zombied out. I don't, you know, Laura K. Hamilton ruined me for elf porn. I'm just not going there. I started reading the series The Boy Who Lit Up the Sky, and it was pretty cool. Until it turns out that he's actually an avatar of Jesus, set in a science fiction setting. At which point I'm like, Seriously? This is where this is going? So I read the first two books. The third book is probably not going to find its way onto my Kindle app. Which is too bad, because it was a really interesting story. It was a really interesting world that was set up. It was really quite cool. And then it became very clear by the end of the second book that this is Christian science fiction. And the evangelical handwriting was on the wall at the end of the second book. And I got a sample of the third book, and it's like, oh, damn. You were doing so well. I have nothing against Christians. What I have is a problem with heavy-handed political dogma masquerading as fiction. So yeah, but back to my ships. There was another Reeves McMillan, I want to say Michael. I think it's Michael. Guy who wrote City of Masks. Great book. If you have not read City of Masks, it's a patio book. Wow. It's an amazing story. It's a lovely story. It is very cool. It's a very wry commentary on the masks that we all wear. And in this case, the masks are literal. And I'm not going to spoil it. You need to read it to figure it out. It is well worth a read. City of Masks. I'm pretty sure it's Michael Reeves McMillan. Anyway, I know it's Reeves McMillan. I'm not sure of his first name. Anyway, he had a good post about genre as... Because he's been struggling with this idea of genre and how it's just a marketing ploy. It's just something that agents and publishers use to say which shelf the book should go on and how silly an idea that is. And then I realized that it was really more analogous to cuisine. So... when you go out to dinner, you're looking for, generally, you're looking for a place that's A, comfortable, if you know what you're going to get when you get there. There are people who will go out and find restaurants that serve things that they've never heard of before, but most people when they go out to dinner are looking for, I think I'd like to have Italian tonight, or I think I'd like to have Thai tonight, or perhaps we'll go to the Chinese bistro, or... maybe we'll go for steak. Maybe we'll look for, you know, a cuisine, American cuisine, Italian cuisine, Asian cuisine. I went to a German restaurant down in Colorado Springs when I was at Cosine. Tex-Mex, not to be confused with Mexican. So there's all of these different cuisines, and when people are looking for something to eat, they're looking for something that they recognize. They're looking for, you know, Indian. We're going to go to the Indian restaurant. They know what they're going to get when they get there. They know they're going to get there and find tandoori chicken and garam masala, and they're probably not going to find. They're probably not going to find tacos. They're probably not going to find. Carne asada. They're not going to go to an Indian restaurant and order lasagna. Because that's not what they're in the mood for. They're in the mood for Indian food, so they're going to go there to eat Indian food. They're going to go to an Italian restaurant to eat Italian food. They're going to go to McDonald's because they just want something relatively bland to tide them over until they can get someplace where there's food. My kids are addicted to Burger King. Oh, Jesus, it drives me crazy. Anyway, genre is like cuisine, and Mike Rees-McMillan does a really good job of explaining this in a wonderful essay that he put on Writers Discussion Group. And it really folds into this idea of mashup. It's why people who do mashups have trouble, because you don't go to an Indian restaurant to find tacos. You don't go to an Italian restaurant to find hot and sour soup. That's not going to happen. And even if it does, it's not going to be the reason people go there. There will be people who discover that they can get hot and sour soup at their favorite Italian restaurant. Perhaps they will go there just because they're in the mood for hot and sour soup, because that particular hot and sour soup is really good. But chances are people are going to discover them there, because when people are looking for hot and sour soup, they look for Asian cuisine, they look for Chinese restaurants, they look for the signposts that point them to the probability that when they get there, they're going to find what they're looking for. Which is what a genre signpost is. It's an indication that if you come here, this is what you're going to get to eat. And why people who try genre mashups and then wonder why they don't sell, that's the reason. Now, some sell, some do very well, some have attracted a unique niche, and they've done a very good job of getting the word out, and they have a highly active and responsive audience that they can tell about it, and so it works out. Oh, this is going to be loud and noisy. And along those lines, there was another post this morning that got to me. The idea that if you want to sell a lot of books, all you have to do is find a genre that sells well, and then read a book in that genre and figure out what makes it work, and then you can write another book that rips off the formula and be a success. Because apparently there was a person who wrote a stepbrother romance and sold 12,000 units in the first 2 months, which is pretty good. I'm not belittling it, but the reality is that it wasn't because they found a genre that sold well. They found a sub niche in a very popular genre that was underrepresented, that was underserved, that didn't have a lot of titles to choose from. And so, bingo, morning. They drop a new book into it, and even though they were completely unknown, they found a really small pond, and they were able to become a relatively large frog. Now, the interesting challenge for that person now is going to be to write the next one, and the next one, and the next one, and the next one, and the next one, because people aren't going to follow her out of that subgenre. They're not going to follow her out of that pond, necessarily. Unless it was a really, really good book, which could be. Could be. But the reality is that there's been a couple of people who've done this in subgenres of romance, and it's pretty common. The Taken by the Werebear, the Alpha Wolf fantasy romances, they're pretty popular. You have to have the right tropes, you have to be able to spin the tale, you have to be able to live in that world. And on the grand scheme of things, that's not someplace I want to go. The reality is that if you get a hit there, and it's in a genre you don't really care for, you're just doing it for the money, what the hell are you going to do for the 15th book? And if you don't write the 15th book, then how are you going to get people to keep paying attention to you there. They're not going to follow you. And it's like, people don't follow me over to Tanith Fairport. They don't like, there's a lot of people who like my science fiction who really don't like fantasy at all. And even though Tanith Fairport is much more like Ishmael Wong than Bilbo Baggins, she gets painted with the Bilbo Baggins brush. People don't go there. Okay. You know, I can accept that. I didn't write Tanith Fairport for people who wanted Bilbo Baggins, just like I didn't write Ishmael Wong for people who wanted Miles Vergosian or Honor Harrington. I wrote it for people who didn't want those. And took a chance that people might like it, and they have. And not just people here, but apparently people in Japan as well. So this whole genre thing is like, oh, come on, people. Think about this a little bit. Just give it a notion. Give it a quick perusal. The reason the genres happen is not simply because publishers need to tell bookstores where to shelve the books. Publishers tell... The genre happens because readers want to know where in the bookstore to find the books they want to read. Now, it doesn't matter if it's Barnes & Noble or Amazon. If you don't go to the place where the books you want to read are, you won't find the books you want to read. Simple as that. At any rate, I am at the back gate. Tomorrow is another day. It's Saturday. Ooh. Wow. I wonder if I'm going to be able to walk tomorrow. Weekends have always been my bugaboo because people just don't move around here. And there's no way I can mow this lawn right now. God, it sucked. Holy crap. I think I'd been watering it this morning, and I haven't. If I could walk across the grass and leave wet footprints, that's not a good sign. So I'll have to wait for a while. I just hope it doesn't get too hot before I come out. At any rate, tomorrow's another day. With any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.